In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
It is time to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn is brought to you every Monday by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Alan Adams from The Main Edge joins us. Good day, sir.
Good day to you, sir. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Happy belated birthday. You celebrated yesterday.
I did. Thank you very much. It was a lovely day. It was one of those things. My birthday has become sort of irrevocably intertwined with the Wayne's Whiffle for a Wish situation, but yeah, no, it was a great time. We actually paid our first visit to the Bissell Brothers Three Rivers location in Milo. It was I was telling you off air, just a beautiful spot. Like, they've done a really great job, and you know, they have some site exclusive beers, and they bring in like food trucks, and they have an outdoor kitchen. Dogs are welcome everywhere. Like, it's just, it was just a really great time out. And we were really glad that we made the trip.
And we talked about it earlier, but another fun day in Wayne's Whiffle for a Wish, our eighth time participating in that. And you know, win or lose, we have fun talking about it, but it really doesn't matter. We're happy to be there because it's so well run and it's such a wonderful event for the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
It's remarkable, really. This is year 11. That's right. Yeah, this was year 11. And, you know, Wayne has really got it down to a really just a well-oiled machine. Like, it's, you know, you've got, God, how many people? A couple hundred? Like, all these people a dozen fields, everybody playing. Like, he's done the scheduling. You know, he's got, you know, the sponsorships and all that stuff. Like, it's really great, and it's a wonderful cause. And, yeah, and it's nice to get out there and be reminded of just, well, the looming specter of death is just hanging over us at every moment. And it's just like, oh, yeah, we are old. We are creaky. You know, my neck hurts. My arm hurts. My back hurts a little bit.
Well, you may well have been the MVP there. It was at worst a tie between you and Bryce Colbeth, because you guys shouldered the pitching load for all those games.
I did okay, but yeah, it's, you know, with Bryce just mowed him down. It was really great fun to watch. It was nice to have him back, and it was nice to, you know, hoist the trophy aloft yet again. It'd been a couple of years,
yeah.
So it was nice to get back into that championship groove, as it were.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, let's talk a little movies. You saw a couple this weekend, Blinded by the Light and Good Boys. Where do you want to begin?
I don't know. What do you feel like, the boss or Children Cursing?
I got to go. School's starting soon, so let's go with Children Cursing, please.
Kids swearing is pretty squarely in my comedic wheelhouse. Like, that's something that I always find great delight in, the juxtaposition of that sort of crudity with the innocence and naivete of youth. It's the sort of thing that can be gimmicky, but in this case, it was in service to what turned out to be a pretty sweet and sort of genuine feeling story about, you know, about what it's like to be, you know, a kid, and, you know, the nature of the relationships that we form, and, you know, and what it means to share these sorts of firsts with the friends that are closest to us. Because, you know, when you're that age, as far as you're concerned, the friends you have when you're 12, you're pretty sure are going to be your friends for the rest of your life. And you can't fathom a world where that isn't true. And granted, you grow older and you know that, you know, people drift apart and what have you. But it's it does a wonderful job of sort of capturing that moment in time when you're crossing that threshold between the innocence of childhood and the more complicated world of adolescence. So that's, yeah, so it's a lot of fun. And again, I can't stress enough, so much cursing. Like, the language is just filthy in the best possible way. So you've got these, the good boys of the title are these three friends. There's Max, played by Jacob Tremblay. He's maturing faster than the other two. And so he's, you know, he's noticing girls and struggling with what that means and all that. He's got his buddy Lucas, played by Keith L. Williams, who's, you know, the sort of a, you know, a rule follower, like someone who's really, who finds the structure. He's sort of the moral center of the movie. And then you've got Thor, played by a young man named Brady Noon, who's struggling with the difficulties of wanting so badly to be cool, but also feeling deep in his heart a love for musical theater, and trying to sort of reconcile those two things. They're going into the sixth grade. They refer to themselves as the collectively they are the Beanbag Boys, because well they all have beanbags, and so the Beanbag Boys.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And they go to school, and there's this girl that that Max has a crush on named Brixley, and you know the cool kids are led by this this little guy named Soren, who is sort of legendary among his middle school peers. And they've got a lot of questions, as kids that age do. But it all starts to get complicated when Soren invites Max to a party at his house, the cool kids party. And Max is like, well, I'd love to come, but can my buddies come? And Soren's like, well, they're kind of random, but okay. and that's when Max finds out it's a kissing party.
Oh.
Yeah. And they don't know anything about kissing. And so they take it upon themselves to try to, you know, find out more about kissing. They do so through some questionable methods. They first go to the internet. Which is always a mistake.
Yeah, bad idea.
Yeah, you never want to go to the internet to ask any sort of question about the physical act of love. And from there, circumstances spiral. Max winds up borrowing his dad's precious drone to try and spy on the girl next door. the older teenage girl, Hannah, played by Molly Gordon, and her friend Lily. But they lose the drone, but wind up instead with a children's vitamins bottle filled with Molly, and so that complicates things pretty considerably, all these obstacles keep piling up in their way, and all the while they're still trying to figure out A, how to kiss, and B, how to get to this party without getting grounded or any of that stuff by their parents. And that's basically it. Like, it's a sort of one big day, as opposed to the sort of one big night that you get in some of the older teen comedies. The obvious comparison is Superbad, because you know, Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are very heavily involved in the production of this movie as well. It's an imperfect comparison, but it makes sense. It's as good a match as any.
And it had a hugely surprising weekend box office.
Yeah, it did over $20 million at the box office. I think I saw somewhere it was it's the highest grossing comedy of the year.
Yeah,
as far as opening weekend is concerned.
And I think I saw it was the first R-rated film to debut at number one in 3 years.
Yeah, and that's great. I will say there were some people who were maybe a little on the younger side in the screening that I went to, which is, you know, they were accompanied by adults, which, you know, opens, you know, invites all sorts of other sorts of questions, because they could not have been clearer in the campaign advertising this movie that it is not for children.
Yeah.
The whole ad series with Seth Rogen basically sitting the stars down and saying, yeah, you can't go to the movie. Like, it's not allowed. But yeah, it's very sweet. And it's a very, feels like a very genuine sort of rendition of that sort of friendship, that sort of, and it's a nice reminder that, you know, no matter how much the world might change around them, like, 12-year-old boys are always going to be 12-year-old boys.
Yeah, and all I could think of in watching the trailer is it feels like a 2019 version of Stand By Me.
It's got that same sort of, like, it's instead of going to find the dead body, they got to get to the mall. You know, it's just like, but everything's bigger, everything's more important in that weirdly exaggerated way all events are when you're that age. And again, so many F-bombs. Like, and it was just like, the more I got, the more I wanted, because it was just, It was just so much fun. And, you know, and as an aside, we've talked about this a little bit on the air in the past, and it continues to be true, in my opinion. We're very much in a sort of renaissance when it comes to child actors. Like, all three of these kids are excellent. And I mean, the supporting players as well. Like the Tremblay kid's legit. Like that, like he was in Room, he was in Wonder. Like he's a legitimately talented performer. And these other kids too. It's just like, it's almost like it's almost reached the point where you don't have to mention it anymore.
But a lot of that too, I have to think, is screenwriter being able to write dialogue that sounds natural for 12-year-old kids.
Yes. Shout out to co-writer Lee Eisenberg, high school classmate of our good friend Chris Rudolph.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was a revelation that was made to me the other day. Yeah. No, Chris let me know that he went to high school with one of the screenwriters.
That's pretty cool.
But yeah, it's a really fun, funny movie. It certainly hit my funny bone in all the right spots. The kids are great. The adult performances are all excellent. It's like some great comedic actors: Will Forte, Lil Ray Howery, Retta, Sam Richardson, and Stephen Merchant both have like single scenes where they absolutely crush it. Like, just a wonderful collection of talent all coming together in service of telling a story that, yes, is crude and crass and filled with terrible language and hilarious misunderstandings of the human body. But it's also a very sweet, very heartfelt, and very, I think, real look at what it's like to be a kid today.
Cool.
Yeah.
I really want to go see it.
Super
now.
Fun. Super
All right,
fun.
That's Good Boys. What about the Springsteen-inspired Blinded by the Light?
You know, it's funny. Sheridan and I went to see this after the wiffle ball tournament. We went that Saturday evening. And I don't think I knew exactly what kind of movie I was getting. The trailers gave the whole thing, made it all seem very frothy, very, very light. And it's a much sadder movie than that. It's a wonderful sort of portrait of what it means to be someone who exists, you know, who doesn't quite fit in the place where they live. The idea of someone trying to figure out where exactly their place is in the world, especially in a world that seems set up, you know, to deny them that place. The way it works, it's the filmmaker, the director who did, she's best known for Bend It Like Beckham, but she tells a lot of these sorts of stories. But yeah, so it's set in 1987. In the small town, small English town called Luton. And Javed is a teenager living with his family in this small town. His parents immigrated from Pakistan and are, you know, came for a better life and are raising Javed and his sisters, one older, one younger. Trying to sort of assimilate in the way that was so broadly encouraged in that time and place, because it's Thatcher's Great Britain, you know, the economy's in the tank, like unemployment is skyrocketing, anti-immigrant sentiments are boiling over in a lot of ways, and in the middle of this, you have this teenage kid who all he wants to do is be a writer. Like, that's what he wants to do. He journals every day. He writes poems. He writes lyrics for his best friend Matt's band. All this stuff. But his dad is super old school. And, you know, he's a factory worker who wants nothing more than than for his children to have a better life. And so the idea of being a writer, it seems, is frivolous. You know, it's not what's done. And so Javed is left to just deal with the reality that, well, he's going to do what his father wants him to do because that's the culture in which he's being raised. And that's all, that's the path we're going down. Like, he's just going to put his head down and go through school and go to university down the street and basically just live the life that his father has envisioned for him. But then he makes a new friend who introduces him to the music of one Mr. Bruce Springsteen. And everything changes for Javed. He connects with the music in a way that he has never connected with anything before. And, you know, at first glance, you're like, oh, well, how, like, you know, what does a working class dude from New Jersey know about the life of a Pakistani immigrant kid in, you know, in a small town in England? Turns out a lot. Like, that's one of the things that I think is so great about the movie, is it really sort of invites you to remember just how universal the themes that someone like Springsteen's able to explore in his music. Like, there's, you know, the idea of, you know, following your dreams, working hard, understanding that sometimes things aren't going to go your way. Like, those are sentiments that can be related to no matter who you are. And that's sort of the gist of it. And so he becomes obsessed with Springsteen, like, starts listening to all his music, starts posters on his wall, starts dressing like Springsteen, like, all this stuff. And he works up the courage, and with the encouragement of one of his English teachers, played by Hayley Atwell, who's here, starts, you know, considering the possibility of maybe I can be a writer. Maybe this is something I can do. And he meets a girl who also is compelled by his writing. And so, you know, that relationship starts to burgeon. But set against all of it is his dad and his dad's insistence that, you know, things be done a certain way. And so that clash makes it all the more difficult for Javed to find the place that he's looking for. And, you know, when you have these two sort of warring factions, something's got to give. And when that happens, you know, it's you just have to hope that that Javed's able to make the choice that's not just best for him, but best for everybody. It's, again, there's a real melancholy to a lot of this. Like, it's because it was a sad time, you know, and you know, to be you know, a Pakistani in a small town in England at that time, like, you know, you're the target of harassment, whether it be, you know, physical or verbal or both, what have you. And so to sort of make your way through that world has got to be hard. And to be able to find the idea of being a teenager and, you know, caring about music in the way that only a teenager does. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, I feel like for the most part, we never love music as much as we do the music that's important to us when we're 15, 16, 17 years old. Like, even when we get older, that music's still kind of our favorite music.
Right.
And so for him to, you know, we kind of capture that sort of as it's happening, that sort of connection, deep down sort of visceral connection when, you know, hormones are raging and, like, everything is changing and you have that sort of feeling deep down that, you know what, the guy coming out of the speakers of my Walkman is speaking directly to me.
Yeah.
The filmmakers do a great job of sort of conveying that. They do some really interesting stuff with, like, projection mapping and iconic like kinetic typography, like a lot of use of text and imagery in terms of you know, as far as the making of the movie. And, like, at the risk of being slight spoiler, I guess, it's a happy ending. Like, the ending, it's sad. There's a sadness that permeates, but in the end, it works out. Maybe not, doesn't work out to the best that it might have, but it works out okay. And really, when you're talking about a story like this, that's all you can really do. It's funny. It's based on a true story. The real life person in this situation has we get a sort of postscript at the end of the movie, has seen Springsteen 150 times, like, in concert, and just, you know, there are all these pictures of the guy with Springsteen and with his family and with his friends and all this stuff. And it's just this wonderful idea that, like, not only is this, you know, not only is this, this fun, this weird sort of inspirational story, but it's real. Mm. Like, and there's something about that that's really, really sort of warms the heart a little bit. Is it a great movie? No, I would not go so far as to call it a great movie, but it is a very good one. And, you know, if you want to, you know, you want to feel some feelings and eventually be uplifted, you could do a lot worse than Blinded by the Light.
Two good ones this week.
Yes, sir.
Blinded by the Light, Good Boys, Alan Adams of the Main Edge telling you all about it. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.
We'll see you on Wednesday.
Yes, sir.